This is an ABC podcast.
By this point, just about everyone has given their 2 cents on how to solve climate change. And that includes some Nationals MPs and senators who, as part of their debate with the Liberals over a net zero target, have made their own pitch to lower emissions by using nuclear power.
LNP Senator Matt Canavan is calling on our government to consider nuclear energy as continued coal-fired power station closures could threaten energy security.
We have the world's largest uranium reserve, so let's keep this option on the table, and that's why myself and my Nationals colleagues are moving amendments in the Senate to allow government investment in the technology at least, so we're ready in a few years' time to make that call if we'd like to.
I think we're the only OECD country without nuclear power. Maybe I'll be corrected on that, but...
That's banned it. The only one that's banned it.
The only one that's banned it. There you go. This is crazy.
I'm Ange Lavoie-Pierre.
And I'm Stephen Smiley. And today on The Signal, how seriously should Australia be taking nuclear power as an option to solve our energy troubles? And would the public support it this time around?
I'll just get you to introduce yourself, please, if you don't mind.
My name's Ian Lowe, and I'm an emeritus professor in the School of Science and Environment at Griffith University in Queensland.
Now, there's been a fair bit of talk recently about whether Australia should be re-examining nuclear energy as an option in order to help us reduce our emissions. When in Australia's history did this idea first come up? I'm guessing this isn't the first time.
Well, the Australian Atomic Energy Commission was established in the 1950s, and a research reactor was located at Lucas Heights, which was then bushland well outside the city of Sydney, to develop the skills and the knowledge that would allow Australia to have nuclear power stations.
Tonight, Australia's first atomic reactor opens at Lucas Heights near Sydney. This afternoon, the Prime Minister, Mr. Menzies, officially declared open HIFAR, which stands for High Flux Reactor, a research reactor for the Australian Atomic Energy Commission. Today's event marks the first major step in Australia's progress towards the production of nuclear power for commercial use.
And it was assumed at the time that nuclear energy would replace coal. During the 1960s, the late Professor Philip Baxter was head of the Atomic Energy Commission, and he was an enthusiastic proponent of the idea that nuclear energy would replace coal.
By the end of this century, the total world bill for nuclear fuel will be round about $10 billion per annum. And if Australia got a reasonable share of this, even if we only got 10%, it would be $1 billion per annum export business, and we might well expect to do very much better than that.
And the closest we got to actually building nuclear power stations was when he persuaded the Gorton government in the late 1960s to approve building a nuclear power station on Commonwealth land at Jervis Bay to the south of Sydney. And it got as far as the Commonwealth government calling tenders to build a nuclear power station on Commonwealth land.
Piled high behind me are the master copies of the tenders for the contract to build Australia's very first nuclear power station at Jervis Bay. These documents, representing the very latest in nuclear technology, have been piled here for a limited showing to the news media today. The Commission has, in fact, received 14 tenders from 7 different companies in 4 countries.
By the time the tenders came in, Gorton had been rolled in the sort of internal party coup that the Liberal Party now specialises in. He'd been replaced by Billy McMahon, and he was worried that the establishment of a nuclear power station might be seen to be breaching the non-proliferation treaty, and he put the project on hold. But then Treasury examined the figures that had come in for the tenders, and they concluded that the electricity would be at least twice the price of the power that was coming from the coal-fired power stations in New South Wales, and they decided that probably it wouldn't make economic sense. And when the Whitlam government was elected, the project was shelved.
It's time for a new team, a new program, a new drive for equality of opportunities.
This is literally the road to nowhere. 3.5 miles of perfect tarmac leading to a great big hole in the ground. But what this hole in the ground is a legacy of a decision taken in 1969 to site right here Australia's first atomic power station.
So basically then nuclear power was seen as off the agenda in Australia, and the closest we had to a comeback was when in 2006 John Howard was finally embarrassed about having done nothing about climate change since he'd been elected, and he set up a task force to look at the option of Australia developing nuclear power.
The Cabinet has approved the establishment of a Prime Ministerial task force to review uranium mining, processing and nuclear energy in Australia. There are always risks, political risks in particular, in doing something like this, but there are political and long-term national costs in sitting on your hands and ignoring reality.
But their report said that it would require both a carbon tax and other forms of public subsidy to make nuclear power competitive in Australia.
And that, according to Ian, is the last time nuclear power was seriously considered. In fact, since 1998, there's been a national ban on nuclear power, on top of bans from a number of states, which coincided with a general decline in public support.
Where has public sentiment on this question generally sat since, you know, the 50s and 60s when it was first an item on the agenda?
Well, in the 50s and 60s, I think there was a general concern about both the environmental issues of burning coal and about the fact that people were regularly being killed and injured in coal mines. So it was seen as a dirty and dangerous technology. So there was general support for the idea of developing nuclear energy, particularly from the engineering professions. There was no hostility to the idea in the 1960s and 70s. It just didn't appear to make economic sense. I think the public mood changed when we started to see serious accidents, first Three Mile Island in 1979.
On Three Mile Island, power plant workers are trying to figure out how to cool down the damaged reactor. But the heat inside the plant has aggravated the problem of escaping radioactive gases. The leak has continued since the reactor accident Wednesday. This morning, Geiger counter readings showed a big jump in the radiation being spewed out.
Then Chernobyl in 1986.
Now clear that the Soviet Union has suffered one of the worst disasters in the history of nuclear power. Massive quantities of radiation have apparently been released in an accident at the Chernobyl power station in the Ukraine. Many thousands of people live in the vicinity. Moscow admits there have been casualties.
And really, orders for new nuclear power stations stalled across most of the developed world after Chernobyl. And then Fukushima was probably the final nail in the coffin, that there was a widespread perception that if an advanced country like Japan couldn't safely manage nuclear power, then maybe it was just too dangerous.
The blast was seen and heard for kilometres. Reactor 1 at Japan's Fukushima nuclear power plant explodes, sending radioactive gas spewing skywards. Nuclear meltdown is the latest terrifying fear of the Japanese. Today, the precarious situation worsened. At the same plant, a second reactor overheated. Authorities are now pumping water into the stricken reactor, releasing radioactive steam to cool it down.
So it's a pretty difficult reputation to overcome, you would think. But the idea is back anyway. So what is the pitch in 2021? And who is making it?
Well, that's a very good question. There's been some odd players. I saw an advertisement in the press by the United Australia Party, which is a very small organisation started by Clive Palmer, saying that Australia needed cheap, clean nuclear energy to power our society. And there was speculation when there were long negotiations between the National Party and the Liberal Party about whether we would commit to net zero emissions by 2050. There was speculation that one of the arguments the National Party was promoting was that we should re-examine the idea of nuclear power.
So you won't tell me if there's nuclear was in the mix? It's been mentioned that
the Nats might want to overturn the legislative ban on nuclear energy?
Look, there's been a lot of speculation, a lot of guesswork by a lot of journalists trying to understand what the Nats may want. And look, nuclear is something the National Party obviously stands firmly behind as a party rim, but we understand you've got to educate before you legislate, and the electorate isn't necessarily there with us at the moment.
The real problem, I think, for the proponents is that up till about 10 years ago, you could make an economic case that we needed to get out of coal, and nuclear power was a proven large-scale technology. Solar and wind were both unreliable and expensive. So if we wanted to decarbonise our electricity supply, we needed to look at nuclear power. That's no longer the case. I mean, the CSIRO and the Energy Market Operator do an annual study called GenCost, and what that shows is that solar and wind with enough storage to be firm capacity is less than half, more like a third the price of the most optimistic projections of what electricity would be from a nuclear power station. The other problem with it as a response to climate change is one of timescale. The Switkowski report said it would take at least 10 years and probably 15 to build one nuclear power station, so that if we decided now to build it, it would be sometime around the late 2030s before it was actually delivering electricity. But we know that in terms of responding to climate change, we have to make deep cuts in emissions by 2030. So one power station would actually in the short term make emissions worse, because a large amount of conventional energy is required to build a nuclear power station in terms of, you know, the concrete and the steel pressure vessel and so on. So in the short term, it would actually make the problem of reducing emissions worse, and it certainly wouldn't be delivering electricity soon enough to meet our international obligations. There is no zero emissions technology. It's true of solar and wind, and it's true of nuclear, that conventional energy is used to produce the technology, and conventional energy is used to process the waste materials at the end of their life. But that's a much bigger problem with nuclear power than it is with solar panels and wind turbines.
One of the arguments that's often deployed in favour of nuclear power here in Australia is the fact that we do have a third of the world's uranium and, you know, comparatively speaking, some pretty good places to store nuclear waste. You know, we're not really on a super active tectonic fault line. Should we be persuaded by either of those things?
Well, those two things mean that if we did develop nuclear power, we wouldn't have the problems that most other countries have. For example, I mean, countries like Japan or South Korea don't have uranium, and they don't have stable geology to store waste. So they have the two problems of both having to import the fuel for reactors and having to find a way of managing the waste. If we did embrace nuclear energy, we didn't have those problems. But I don't think that's a persuasive reason to do it, just because it would be less difficult for us than it is for, say, Japan or Korea. I think the other issue that that I've raised is the political one. The reason the neighbours of Iran are nervous is they see a country that has plentiful oil and gas and plentiful resources of solar and wind developing nuclear energy. And they're understandably suspicious about what their motives really are. And there's widespread concern in the Middle East that Iran might be secretly thinking to develop nuclear weapons. I think if Australia, which has plentiful fossil fuel resources but also enormous resources of solar and wind, were to go down the path of developing nuclear energy, I think our neighbours might be understandably suspicious that the real motivation was to camouflage our desire to build nuclear weapons.
So that's the guts of the case for and against nuclear power. And so far, there hasn't been any great rush from political leaders outside of the Nationals to support it. From the Prime Minister Scott Morrison.
Why can't nuclear be part of the technological options for the next 30 years?
Well, we'll see what happens down the track. But right now, right now, there's a moratorium on nuclear here in Australia, and the Labor Party are totally opposed to it. And I'm just not going to put Australia through the argument, which doesn't get us anywhere because the moratorium isn't lifted, and for the Labor Party to run around at the next election and get themselves elected on the basis of a scare campaign.
Or from the opposition leader, Anthony Albanese.
No, because it doesn't stack up. What stacks up for Australia is clean energy, like the renewable energy that we see here.
And Ian says there are lessons from the last push towards nuclear power under John Howard in 2006 as to why they're taking that position.
The Australia Institute looked at the criteria for siting of nuclear power stations and published a list of possible sites if Australia were to build a nuclear power station. And the tsunami of panic among sitting members of Parliament had to be seen to be believed, as they all desperately scurried around to make it clear that while they weren't necessarily hostile to the idea of nuclear power in general, they certainly weren't going to support one in their electorate. And I think that's probably a quite fundamental problem for those who think we should build nuclear power stations, even if there was a government willing to spend large amounts of public money subsidising a more expensive technology and prepared to wait 10 or 15 years to have it, you would have to face the problem that it's been difficult even to get a site to store the comparatively benign low-level waste that's produced by medical technologies and diagnostic imaging. And I can't imagine how you would sell to the Australian community the idea of building a huge nuclear reactor to develop nuclear power anywhere where people have any sort of say in the decision-making.
So that tells us a little bit about public opinion on this in 2021. The Nationals Deputy Leader David Littleproud said on this topic that, you know, you've really got to educate people, bring the community with you, and that at the moment people are getting their education from Chernobyl and from The Simpsons.
Sadly, I think where most people education of nuclear comes from is from Chernobyl and, yeah, and The Simpsons. And so what we've got to do is I think we've got to create an environment for a mature conversation.
Sort of implying there that Australians don't really understand the risks, and if they did, that they'd probably be fine with it. Do you think that that's a fair remark? Do you think Australians are more frightened than they need to be of nuclear power at the moment?
Well, I think that it's fair to say that the world has about 400 operating nuclear power reactors, and there have only been three serious accidents, and only two of those resulted in the release of large quantities of radioactive material into the environment. Three Mile Island basically destroyed the power station, but there was no release of radiation off-site. So that's not a bad record, but I think if nuclear power were really the only way to slow down climate change, I'd be inclined to grit my teeth and say, yes, there are problems of managing waste and there are problems of securing fissile material to make sure it's not misused. But those problems are in principle soluble. If it were really the only way to slow down climate change, I'd be in favour of it. But the fact is today, the average price of electricity from solar farms and large wind turbines is around 4 cents a kilowatt hour. And the average price of electricity from new nuclear power stations last year around the world was 16 cents a kilowatt hour. So it's not a bit more expensive, it's four times as expensive. And no amount of education will blur that fact. I think you could educate the community to recognise that if properly managed, nuclear power could be acceptably safe. But there's no way of educating them to believe that it will give them cheap electricity, because that is contrary to all the operational evidence.
That is The Signal for today and for this week. Keep an eye out over the weekend for our sister podcast. This week, Linda Mottram is talking about the progress at COP26 so far, and she's looking into what's so strange about the case of Cleo Smith, the 4-year-old who was reunited with her parents after she went missing on a camping trip in WA. It's called This Week. You can find it wherever you usually get your podcasts. And if you'd like to reach us in the meantime, our email is thesignal@abc.net.au.
We'll catch you on Monday. Bye.
Bye.
You've been listening to an ABC podcast. Discover more great ABC podcasts, live radio and exclusives on the ABC Listen app.
And Ian says there are lessons from the last push